Good morning. I love any opportunity I get to go anywhere where Greg is leading the worship. Doesn't he do a fantastic job? I hope this morning, in just a little bit of time that you've got to hear from the people that I get to work with on a regular basis, you see what a blessing it is to work with such a great group of people. And we want to thank you so much for an opportunity to come and share about what you make possible. Your financial support, the prayers that you offer, the hours that you give in volunteer service, make all the things that we've been talking about today, all the things that you see on those boards outside, you make those things possible. And so it's great for us not to only come and share about the things that we're passionate about, but a great chance for us to come and say thank you for all the years of faithful support that you've given us. I want to jump right in there because our time is running short. And so I'm setting myself a timer. I'm not going to try to keep you here so that you're the last ones to the restaurant on Sundays. I know how important that is. I want you to think back with me 2,000 years, right? Jesus was going around and he was preaching, and the people that came to Jesus were people who were kind of outcasts. We can go ahead and go to the next slide. When Jesus came and he went to the mountain where he gives the Sermon on the Mount, the people who had followed him out to this place to hear what he had to say, for the most part, these are simple country folk from Galilee, right? Galilee is a place that might resemble Arkansas in a few ways in that it wasn't the fanciest place. Not in as far as the United States go, no offense, I love Arkansas, I like being here, but it's probably not the state that you think of first when you think of the United States, right? It's definitely not the state that you think of when you think like big business and fancy stuff and notoriety, right? Galilee was that kind of place. Jesus is talking to people who are fishermen and are farmers, and of those people, he's really finding his followers among the people who are poor, who are sick, and who just don't fit in. These are the ragtag people who have come out to hear Jesus speak. And so Jesus is talking to people who have kind of been pushed to the side. Life has kind of beat them down a little bit. And I want you to listen to what Jesus says, because Jesus calls them to their identity. I love that this is what Jesus does with them. He reminds them who we are. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it loses its taste?" We don't use salt really for much anything else, do we? Can you re-season salt? No. It's worthless. Cast it out and step on it, basically, he says, right? It's worthless. If salt isn't salty, then what's the good in having any salt? In these days, salt was so valuable, not only for the flavor that it gives. Imagine eating a meal without salt. Anybody really enjoy doing that? Maybe some of you are on a low-sodium diet. And imagine you're probably not all that happy about it if you are you? Salt not only has value because of that, but also in these days they used it as a preservative, and still you can find salted hams and things like that that are used. But they also used salt as currency just because everybody wants to have salt with their meal, right? But here's what the trickier people would do. If you can use this as currency, and I used this comparison the other day, maybe it doesn't have as much meaning in your culture as it does where I work on a daily basis, but people cut drugs. They mix other things into it so what you actually buy doesn't have as much into it. This is what they did with the salt. They're mixing sand in with it. So if you weigh this out as payment, the scale says one thing, but the actual value that you have in this bag is not the same, right? And so people could do this so many times, it could pass through so many hands, and this happened a little bit more each time, that you could actually end up with payment that's more sand than it is salt. And how happy would you be about that? Anybody want to sprinkle some sand on their meal before they eat it? I don't think so. Then he says, "You are the light illuminating this world." How beautiful is that? I want to be that. Right? I want to be a preservative. I want to give flavor. I want to illuminate like a city set on a mountaintop. It can't be hidden, right? Next slide, please. Jesus is calling back to a picture that a lot of us miss because we miss a lot of intricacies of language by trying just to give a short, concise translation of things. So in the beginning, when the human being was formed out of the dirt, do you remember this? And it says that God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. That word for breath is a really interesting word because it means breath, it means spirit, and it means light. It's all of those meanings together in one word. And we miss that because we don't have a word that says all those things, do we? In the very beginning, when God breathed into them, he didn't just breathe breath. He breathed his spirit, and he breathed his light into them. This means from the very beginning, when the first human being was formed, we were put here as light on this earth. Not just any light, the light that comes from God. That is our true and our original identity, and this is what Jesus calls their minds back to. Next slide, please. So he reminds them what you do with light. He says, no one lights a lamp and hides it under a basket. No, they put it on a high stand and it enlightens everyone in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine as a light on all mankind. Then everyone will be able to see it and praise your heavenly Father. In these days, in the cities especially, where the people lived, were a lot of times cramped living spaces. They had apartment buildings back in Jesus' day. Did you know that? And the apartment buildings were very interesting. See, a lot of times they were structures that were thrown together without a whole lot of money being invested into it. And so the bottom floor was either where your business was or where the wealthiest people lived. If you go a floor up, well, rent's a little cheaper. It's for poorer people. And the higher up on the levels of these apartments you went, the cheaper it was and the poorer the people there were, because if there was a fire, you were probably going to die. The structure got worse as it went up, and it's harder to get out. And people lived in these apartment buildings as multifamily units. When we think of apartments, we think one family living in their own quarters, right? No. This was oftentimes a room. And in this room, there would be multiple families living. So the first ones to get there, they would try to get a corner off to themselves, right? But as more families move in, this place starts to fill up. And it's one big room with a burner that's there where everyone kind of grills their food. Right? Imagine this. Put yourself in this setting and imagine someone lighting a candle and trying to keep the light for themselves. Well, what happens in a dark room when you light a candle? Does it only light that one area, or can you see the light from everywhere in the room? He says it's as ridiculous as someone in that setting trying to take a basket and say, this light's for me, right? Only I get this light. It makes absolutely no sense to try to do that, right? You put it under a basket, and then it's no value to anyone, right? But sometimes, this is exactly what life does to us. Life deludes. Life hides our identity. Or we get to the point where we feel like no one can really know who we are deep inside and that we have to hide our identity. See the wisdom in what Jesus is saying, how he's describing so often what we feel? Next slide, please. Later on, the Apostle Paul will write, reminding people how to hold on to this identity. I love this passage, and I think it's a great encouragement to us. He says, you will shine like stars among them in the world as you hold firmly to the word of life. Right? So think about things like this statement that Jesus said. If I hold firmly to that, I can be reminded of my identity. And my identity is vitally important. Right? If I can remember who God made me to be, that will teach me so much about how I'm to live and how I'm supposed to treat other people. Next slide, please. But we work every day among people who are shattered. They're shattered by abuse, by rape, by addiction, by circumstances they don't know how to get out of, by being homeless, by being stripped of their humanity and forgetting their identity. And you don't have to live in poverty to know what it is to feel shattered. You may be here this morning, and you showed up feeling like the pieces are barely being held together. I don't know what's going on in your life, but I know this. We are really good at putting on a good face and acting like everything is okay, while inside, we're dealing with hard stuff. I don't know how many of you have things going on with your family or people that you love that are breaking your heart right now. I don't know how many of you have received news about your health that you don't know how to deal with. I don't know how many of you may be sitting in here with life challenges that are just bigger than you are. All of those things can make you feel just as broken and shattered as the people that we work with on a daily basis. Next slide, please. So here's where our identity becomes important, because all these things will start stripping it away from us, and we need to be reminded, we need to be called back to our identity. Look at these beautiful people on this slide. These are pictures of people from the Himba tribe in Africa. And the Himba tribe is very unique in the way that they count the birthday of anyone who's born, right? In the cultures we're familiar with, it's the day that you were born. That's why it's called a birthday, right? You know, in some cultures, though, they try to count 9 months back from that, and they try to count it from conception. There's a few countries that do that. Korea's one of them, where right now they're kind of trying to decide which route they're going to go with that. The younger people are saying we should do the day of birth like everybody else, and the older people are saying we can't leave our tradition. The Himba tribe does it differently, though. You know when they start, when they count birth from? It's really interesting. This is from a study that someone went and lived with them for 10 months and wrote for National Geographic. They said they count birth from the day that the mother decides that she's going to have a child. And on that day, she goes out and she finds a tree and she sits under that tree and listens until she can hear the song of the child who wants to come into the world. Then she returns home to her husband and she teaches him that song. And on the night when they try to conceive, they sing that song together to invite that child into the world. Then she teaches that song to the midwives. And when the time of birth comes, they sing that song as this child is coming into the world. When they celebrate this child's birthday, this song is sung. Right? Not happy birthday, but instead this specific song for this child, right? The people in the community are taught this song so that they can join in the celebration together with them. When this child hits major event lives, like when the child enters puberty or goes through the rites of man or womanhood, they sing them this song. On their wedding day, the man and the woman's songs are blended together and sung at their wedding. Isn't that a beautiful practice? But you know another time when this song is sung? When the child is hurt, either the mother or one of the people in the community will hold the child and sing them that song. And as an adult, if they commit a crime, they're brought into the town center, and all the tribe gathers around them in a circle and sings them their song to remind them who they are. Because they don't believe that this should be punishment. They believe it should be a loving reminder of that person's identity. And then when someone's on their deathbed, they're saying that song again to welcome them home. Isn't that beautiful? And this is what Jesus is doing for his people. He's calling them back to their identity, to who they really are. And that is the work that Jesus invites us into. When we see people who are hurting, when we see people who are struggling, when we see people who have no hope, who life has broken and shattered, we remind them of who God made them to be. We remind them of their true identity. Do we have any Grey's Anatomy fans in the crowd, by any chance? Anybody? Oh, dear. Maybe I picked the wrong place to do this one. All right, next slide, please. I mention it because this is a concept that is one of my favorites, and they actually mentioned it in the episode of Grey's Anatomy a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, I know this! So it got me real excited. I'm usually not that excited about Grey's Anatomy. That's usually my wife's thing. But there was a rabbi who was dying, and he brought up a Jewish concept that's really actually very old and goes back to Isaiah and the prophecy that Jesus says is about John the Baptist, right? Make his way straight. That term, to make straight or to straighten things out, is tikkun olam, right? And this is a term that developed in Jewish communities to mean bringing the kingdom or repairing the earth. And Jesus plays with this concept in his teaching. Think about, tell me if you can recognize it in what Jesus says in his home synagogue when he tells people, really, they don't realize it yet, but he's telling them what his mission is all about. You remember this passage? This is at the bottom here. This is where Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is with me. He has anointed me to tell the good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal those who are brokenhearted, to announce forgiveness to the prisoners of sin and the restoring of sight to the blind, to forgive those who have been shattered by sin, to announce the Lord's Jubilee. You see, the idea is that all of God's creation has been shattered. That's tikkun olam, the idea behind it. And that every time that we share love, every time that we share God with each other, every time that we alleviate another person's pain, these drawings together of God's people draws back together the broken pieces of not only who we are, but of what make up all of God's creation. And that's how the world is repaired, and that's how the kingdom comes about. Next slide, please. Think about this passage in that light. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you, right? You remember this passage? Again, if you're thinking about the intricacies of language, this is another way they could be phrased. Next slide, please. Work to bring God's kingdom and justice, and you will have everything that you need. As we reach out to each other in love, as we call each other back to our identity, as through love and through Christ's sacrifice, our pieces are put back together, you know what happens? There is the kingdom. There is justice. And really, you've got all that you need. If I'm whole and complete, who cares what kind of car I drive? Who cares what kind of house I live in, right? When these things are put back together, because I can have all those other things, and if I'm not put together, if I'm not whole and I'm not intact, I'm not happy. I'm still missing my true identity. Next slide, please. Think of this passage in that light. This is one of my all-time favorite passages, and this is from The Message. So spacious is he, so roomy, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death, his blood that poured down from the cross. Jesus looks at you and he can see your brokenness. Jesus looks at me and the people that I work with every day, the people that Keith and Don and Greg and I and our families sit down with and cry with and are brokenhearted with and don't have answers for. And he sees how broken we all are. And instead of rejecting that and saying, what am I supposed to do with all these broken pieces? He fits them together in vibrant harmonies. And God's creation is restored through that sacrifice that he gave. It's the work that he's doing, and it's the work that he invites us into. And you don't have to leave your house to start this work. Look at the people next to you. Go ahead, take a minute. This isn't a hypothetical. Look at the people next to you. The people sitting next to you right now hurt. The people sitting next to you right now forget who they are. The people sitting next to you need to be reminded that they are salt and they are light, and that through them, God shines out into the darkness of this world. Do you believe that about yourself? Maybe at my best I do, but I have trouble at times. Maybe what you need right now, you need that blood, you need that sacrifice, you need to recognize how Christ is putting you back together in a vibrant pattern that makes up who he is and his vision for all that this world can be. Don't let anything stand in the way of that, because God's not willing to. He's ready. He's willing. All he needs is for you to be ready and willing as well. So we call you this morning. If your brothers and sisters here can be a part of you coming back together with God and remembering your identity in him, don't let anything stop you, but make those things right today. Thank you.